Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's up? Welcome back to Season 3 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is the team.
What's up?
We got Janelle Wheeler from our new location.
I'm visiting my parents and I'm picking up the puppy.
Oh, man, you got big things happening.
Well, very excited,
yes. Glad you stopped and had
They're
time.
They're both vaccinated today. Also. Both of my parents are vaccinated, so.
All right, let's clap it up for that. Yeah. Everybody's getting shots. There's shots, there's puppies. I mean, you got good stuff going on in your world. Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Aguilar is back with us again, as usual.
Yeah, what's up, everybody? I don't have any cool stories to share. We're not picking up a dog, and I am not vaccinated yet.
That is untrue. You have cool comic stories to tell us that we're going to break down today. So,
look at you.
Yeah, there we go. You're here. I mean, so Matt's going to break down some new comics. We got some good comics to talk about today. DC has launched a new Joker series. Marvel's put out a new X-Men series, kind of, and we're going to talk about all of that.
Kofi already wants to talk about it. You can tell from the hesitation.
I am really chomping at the bit to get this. I put it in the show notes. We have to have time to talk about this, so... Let's get to it, because up first, we are going to talk about WandaVision. The ending of WandaVision is now here. So we are going to reflect on, was WandaVision a good show? That is the question in front of us. We are going to break that down, plus the preview of what's coming in Phase 4 of the MCU. Everything from the Falcon and Winter Soldier to discussions about Black Widow, Spider-Man, all that stuff. Plus, we also got to look at the latest previews for both Falcon and Winter Soldier and Zack Snyder's Justice League. We got a ton of new clues from the new kind of TV ads and trailers that we're going to discuss here. And as Matt said, we got to break down these new comics, plus talk about some things going on in TV and movies. Coming to America's out, and The Walking Dead is back, and we're going to real quick touch on all of that. But let's get up front to what everybody came for, the main event. Was WandaVision a good show? Guys, it's over now. The fan theories are over. We've seen the payoff.
Thank the Lord.
How are you guys feeling? Janelle, let's start with you, ladies, first.
Okay.
Was WandaVision a good show for you? Was that a good experience?
Yes. As a whole, I'm in love with this show. I'm still just tickled by the sitcom. Going back, I'm rewatching it with my mom right now. And going back for a second watch through, like complete watch through, is actually brilliant. It's great. So I feel really good about it still. I have to admit this, like during the finale, I was screaming constantly, like, Doctor Strange swoops in! Doctor Strange swoops in! Here he comes! Doctor Strange is coming! Doctor Strange is in! And like the whole time, so I was just screaming, waiting for Doctor Strange to come in and help Vision or to help the kids. Or to show up, you know, with the Darkhold or something. But once I got past that and I rewatched the finale again, and I wasn't trying to look for every possible suggestion of Doctor Strange, I actually really enjoyed it. I thought they did a beautiful job of putting a bow on the show. I wouldn't say it was like the best episode in the entire series, but I would say I'm satisfied with it.
Hey, okay, Matt, how you feeling, buddy?
Because
you were a little bit more skeptical on this whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna start with positive first. I love everything they did with the Scarlet Witch side of the character, the costume, the explaining chaos magic, all that stuff. Right. That stuff is cool, and they did a great job. And the suit looks awesome. And I love that there's more explanation or powers there. That's good. But as we know, the show has been, and it has, and if you say anything negative about the show, the thing you hear first is, well, it's a story about grief. It's a story about grief, Matt. Why don't you understand the story about grief? And my thing is, if we're taking that as the through line through this whole season, then this episode did not deliver on that premise. It leaves one that is not really the focus of much of this episode, and the parts that are interesting, but then it gives no consequences, really. I mean, I don't know, as someone, like a lot of people who have dealt with grief and also just like, you know, dealt with things in your life you wish you could have back right and like all those kinds of things and regret, the character leaves. And by the way, we should say spoilers. I don't know if we actually said that yet.
Gosh,
so
spoilers.
I'm about to get into like very spoiler territory. So let me put that out there. Spoilers. For as a character that's supposed to like all these consequences are supposed to pop up, she leaves with almost nothing. She leaves with bad looks. I'm sorry. You controlled an entire town and made them bend to your will. And as we see, it had a profound effect on them. Agatha even points it out, and then we're supposed to feel sorry for you because you leave with some bad looks from people. I get bad looks walking through, well, not Kmart anymore because that's not around, but like, like Walmart,
Target.
Like whatever. I'm sorry. That does not sit well with me. And by the way, I love Monica, but that line, they don't know what you've sacrificed for them. What a joke. That's really, they're supposed to feel grateful to you for this. Like this is your fault. And I understand where it comes from, but you need to deal with that. Like that needs to be something you deal with. Not just, oh, I go off and I live in my little cabin in the woods. Like to me, there was no, and then you see the other dude in handcuffs. I'm like, someone should have said, we kind of need to take you in, even if they don't get to, or she leaves, that needs to kind of be done. Like there was so many things that was just about that particular aspect of this show, which has been what it has been hailed for. So for to drop the ball like that to me was disappointing. You know, the other stuff is great. The MCU-ishness of everything else is great. But if that's your main focus, to not deliver on that and to make the consequences seem not consequential, that's a little off the ball for me. So I didn't love that.
Wow. I didn't expect you to be that deep. That was a lot more deep than I was prepared to deal with. Okay. Let's unpack, because the commenters, there's a lot of commenters on your side right now. I mean, they're pointing out everything you said about Wanda not being arrested, not having consequences. Other people are not cool with how the ultimate play out with the finale or with the family went. Some people are really kind of upset about the Billy and Tommy and how they just put them to bed and kind of left them to do that. That I kind of get as a parent, because that's kind of how I would handle it. I wouldn't want to tell. If I saw me and my wife, because we're morose, have that conversation. Like if there was like a nuclear blast and we got the alert, like what would you do and how would you handle it? And be like, yeah, I just want the kids to like be at peace and normal. And, you know, I deal with the heavy stuff. I get that part. But yeah, it Brandon Davis has been out doing some digging for us on this, and he's dug up some interesting things about the show from director Matt Shakman. And one of them is confirming, like, yeah, there were supposed to be 10 episodes to this, right? That got changed probably because of COVID, and there was supposed to be another episode to this. So it feels, and there's a lot of this going around the entertainment industry, and we're going to continue to experience this. I know, like, The Undoing, that big series, The Undoing from last year was the same way. The endings of things are truncated because of COVID, and it feels like they just had to kind of.
Did they actually confirm it's because of COVID? I thought it was because they figured out that they needed to keep it moving.
I don't know. I never trust what Marvel says. Like, I think they say like they had control over something, but when just to cover if they don't. But anyway, whatever the reason is, whether it's COVID or pacing, I mean, the decision was wrong by most people's standards, right? Like there needed to be a little bit more. This seemed like a good penultimate episode with a fight and all that, but a tacked on epilogue, whereas we needed to kind of deal more with, you know, yeah, why doesn't Wanda get arrested? Like, where the hell is White Vision, like, in the aftermath of all this, and kind of all that. Instead, we got the usual Marvel post-credit scenes that kind of just tacked on and set up Doctor Strange 2 with Wanda, you know, going through the Darkhold and learning chaos magic and hearing something, her son's call out to her. I think when I look back on the series, and I've started to rewatch as well, I like a lot of the deeper pain and meaning behind the sitcom episodes and that fake reality, especially after episode 8, just going back to episode 1 and seeing her kind of greeting Vision and having this 1950s thing. You know what it's about, and that impact is there. But I also agree with Matt in the sense that I'm in between you both, I think, because I think when you also watch the series overall and you get out of the sitcom stuff and you just get to the actual present action of what's happening here, first of all, not a lot happens in this show. Our fan theories gave this like way more propulsion than was actually going on in this show.
Don't get me started.
I mean, it was just like this bubble world. Agatha was the obvious agitator. Sword was trying to get in, and we just, the only reason they got in is so that Monica could have this kind of like, you know, just as Machina kind of superpower transformation. And then it's just like, there is no resolution. Like Wanda was sad. Wanda decides she's going to get her stuff together. Or does she? Because we don't know what she's going to do with this Darkhold. We don't know that she says she's like a hero for like a minute in this finale. She's like, I am a hero. I stop now. And then she kind of like, but we don't know that this is going to a heroic place, right? I mean, Doctor Strange is called in the multiverse of madness. She's messing around with the Darkhold and chaos magic and has already freaked out once. So it doesn't look like there is much resolution to this other than her kind of ultimate goodbye to Vision, which doesn't have to last long because they'll be back, right? And Billy and Tommy will probably be back and are back by the end. So, yeah. And there are a lot of just weird things, I think, that were kind of underdeveloped from the sword side of things. The aerospace engineer wasn't intentional. That got crazy. Somebody started putting it in people's heads that Reed Richards was coming. Don't know who.
Brandon
Davis. Yeah. Brandon Davis. Let's call him B. Davis. No, that's too obvious. Brandon D. All right. So some people kind of got people rolling on all of that. But I mean, overall, there wasn't that much that actually happened here, except for a very long, drawn out, and ultimately obvious mystery. But weirdly enough, I think, and I wrote a thing that's called, nobody read it, thanks guys, but it's called WandaVision, like it's been fun, don't be disappointed. And the whole premise of that was, I think what this show did was arrive at a weird time.
I did read that, Kofi.
Thank you, Matt. And thank you. And basically, it arrived at this time, and it's just one of those cases where I think if this was released any other time than it had been, it may not have been as popular. But I think the themes of just grief and isolation and retreating into these bubble worlds and all of the fan theories and letting our imaginations go nuts, like it arrived at exactly a time when we really needed that. We needed to get back into something like Marvel escapism. We needed something that kind of echoed our experiences of being in quarantine and losing people or losing just aspects of our life that we kind of had to sacrifice last year. I mean, it was just a timing thing. And I think that the fun outweighs the ultimate kind of shallowness of the show, because I loved coming on here every week and freaking out about theories and writing about Mephisto and Chukufalu and, you know, every other demon under the sun and doing that. And I think that stuff's important. I think it was important for us to kind of dip our toes in and get back into that practice. So I'm not that mad at you. Now that we have seen this, though, I want to move the kind of the goalpost of questions. Is it time to reset some of our expectations for how this plays into the next phase of movies and TV shows? Because I'm going to tell you, I'm not so sure about the Spider-Man thing anymore. Like, I'm not so sure that what we've seen is, you know, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and all this stuff is actually Spider-Man. I'm beginning to wonder if some of this stuff, because we now know for sure that like Doctor Strange 2 is filming over in the UK as well. And is this part of that? Could that be part of that? Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of groundwork underneath us for there to be a Spider-Man movie about him having some kind of weird multiverse freak out now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a beautiful point, is like now we can't get our hopes up on anything. I really, personally, I learned my lesson big time in prediction because this is the first time I was with you guys on a live podcast, like predicting Marvel stuff. I didn't get to do that with you guys because I started, you know, about a year and a half ago with you guys, and then the world shut down. And this was my first time really getting on and, you know, giving my theories and really like reading the comic books and analyzing and trying so hard to just be like the first person that's actually guessing where it's going. I've learned my lesson. I was completely proven wrong. And I, more than anything, like I hope that I didn't contribute to people getting their hopes up the way that I got my own hopes up, because I was so excited for a few things that I thought for sure were happening and they did not. So I think that's a great call. I am not going to be surprised if anything doesn't happen, and I will not be surprised if things do happen at this point. Good job, guys. You taught me something. I'm talking to Marvel.
Sounds like they broke you.
They broke me. A little bit. Yeah, I'm a little broken. And that's I'm going back to comic books.
But like,
we're all a little wanted, Janelle.
And also, can we just like, some of the things you were talking about were things like everyone assumed. Like Doctor Strange was one we were talking about. You know how like anti-theory I've been during this show. But even that was like, no, he's got to show up. Like it makes the most sense. And he didn't. Like that was everybody. So like, don't feel bad. And also don't let it diminish. It's still
interestingly enough, Matt Shackman addressed that. Brandon Davis did talk to him about that. And he kind of alluded to something along the lines of, you know, this is how the cookie crumbled, like, you know, things fall out, you know, you can't always blah, blah, blah. Basically saying it sounded like there could have been an attempt to make that happen.
Okay.
But the logistics of it didn't work out. And he's kind of the biggest one hanging his head like, like we can get like the most obvious person in here.
I heard Checkman talking about the bunny too. The bunny was supposed to be something of significance, but it didn't pan out in the writing and stuff. So did you guys hear about this? Like originally the bunny was going to be like a demon, not the demon we thought, but a demon in general. And he was going to have this like metamorphosis from the bunny to the demon. And he was going to be protecting a spell book, and the kids were going to, you know, take the Darkhold and run away in a Stranger Things-esque, like the Goonies type sequence. And
anybody got time or money for that.
You know, they had it, but they
got money
and all that. Yeah. Yeah. They cut it all. Yeah,
they got the money.
They cut it all. So thankfully, like that, they did lead us on with the bunny. At least I do know that, like they didn't mean to, but they unfortunately did. So yeah.
Also, what I would just say, I do want to address a comment that I saw flip by quickly in here. I will say, it's always, the MCU has always taken the concepts from the comics and done their own little twist on them from the very beginning. That said, this show still had, because I saw something in there that comic fans don't know any more than just someone coming in. That's not true, because there's like 9 things in this show that are pulled directly from the comics and storyline. So you have an idea of where things came from in context. It's just that they're going to typically take a different route towards the end to get wherever they want to go. They cherry pick from like numerous stories in every movie and now every show. But that doesn't mean like there's not still value there. Like, let's not go again. Let's not go one extreme or the other. I swear, nuance is lost. It's like there's no middle ground anymore. It's either one or the other. It's all balance. It's a little bit of both.
All right, there you go.
That's our feeling today.
Yeah, I know. Those are feelings on WandaVision. Is there any theories that you guys think we had that could still pan out? I'm actually not off board with our villain theories. I mean, I think Mephisto or some demon is going to still be involved in this. I also think Immortus will be behind explaining why Sword was so weird and why Hayward's firing bullets at kids by this last episode. And that's going to all tie back later. But I just don't think this series opened the door to it quite yet, and it didn't need to. All right, let's talk a little bit about...
Thank you, Nicholas. He agreed with me. Thank you, Nicholas.
Nicholas. All right, he goes by. All right, there you go.
I didn't see who said the comment. All I saw was a go by, and I was like, okay, good job. Anyway.
All right, let's talk about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. People are already kind of, now that we've kind of been fed some more Marvel content, people want more content, you know? So
more content.
Latest TV spot for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It was pretty funny, actually. I like this one, but it was like Anthony Mackie. They're talking about this new kind of group of, like, I don't know what to call them, hijackers, raiders, marauders, whatever they are. The people with the masks with the handprints on them. And Anthony Mackie alludes to the fact that they're kind of really brutal and that they're strong. And he kind of says, you know, too strong, ... over this footage of them, you know, doing all kinds of Steve Rogers-esque stuff. And it was our biggest suggestion in the series yet that at somehow there's some other form of super soldier or enhancement formula at play in all this. which kind of was a keystone for me because it got me thinking, and I was like, oh, so now I'm on to new theories.
No.
You want to come with me?
No.
I want to hear them. I don't know if I'm going with you, but I want to hear them.
Listen, we're going to take a break, pay some bills, and then we're not stopping, guys. We're going right from this ad break from WandaVision theories into Falcon Winter Soldier theories. There's no more stoppage. We're keeping this train going. So stay tuned with us. We're coming back. Falcon Winter Soldier, Zack Snyder's Justice League, coming to America, new DC Marvel books. We're talking about
it. Coming to America.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Okay, thanks for hanging with us. Like I said, we are wasting no time. We got done with WandaVision theories. We are going right into Falcon and Winter Soldier theories. Series arrives next Friday. Newest TV spot drops the kind of hint that what Falcon and Winter Soldier are actually tracking down is this group with the mask and the handprint, because there is some kind of super soldier serum or new enhancement serum involved in all this. My big theory about this was doing some research. We were kind of discussing at Comic Book yesterday about, you know, what does this mean and why is this important, is that there are several kind of key tie backs to Marvel Comics about how this new, what this new super soldier serum could be, what the entire kind of legacy of the serum is, and how this show could explore that. First of all, you know, the super soldier serum, since Steve Rogers in Marvel Comics history, has had many attempts to replicate it by different countries, including the U.S., which did many different things that seem to be baked into Falcon and Winter Soldier. Everything from the kind of truth, red, white, and black, about how after World War II, they tried to experiment on black soldiers to make a new Captain America and ended up doing some really dark things because of that, where Anthony Mackie says, like, the S.H.I.E.L.D. has a complicated history and all that, and about him taking it up. You know, variations of the super soldier serum were used to make Luke Cage, and that's a great way to kind of tie back to bringing Luke Cage back. They were also used by Black Widow program, and this may be one of the reasons why Falcon and Winter Soldier has to come before Black Widow, why there has to be an order to this, because it's going to introduce the idea that there is more of this serum out there being played with, and Black Widow will kind of take up that same storyline. But the biggest thing we kind of landed on was Anti-Cap. Matt, you remember Anti-Cap?
Yes.
Yeah. Not Marvel Comics' proudest moment, but it may have given us something we can use, right? So the Anti-Cap was a U.S. Naval intelligence officer who got this patch called AVX, which gave a version of the Super Soldier Serum that kind of gave this temporary boost in powers, but it was kind of like crack. You couldn't stop taking it or you died. And so this boosted him and he became Anti-Cap, and kind of was like a pain in the butt for Steve Rogers and, you know, and for fans everywhere. But the point is that this could be an easy way that they kind of explore it in this series, right? Like, these new hijackers are using something like this patch to give themselves boosts of power to pull off these robberies. It's a great way to kind of tie Sam and Bucky into something for why they would be fighting for. You know, Sam is protecting Cap's legacy. Bucky's been on the other end of experiments to make super soldiers and knows how bad this can go. It would bring back in Zemo, who knows all this stuff. And it would also explain John Walker, U.S. agent, who could be revealed to be also using some kind of gnarly process to be a fake as Captain America, right?
That's the one that rings like most true with that theory to me, is that that's how he is able to have.
Matt, are you co-signing my theory, Matt?
I'm saying if I were to, which I'm not, if I were to, that's a pretty good theory. That's pretty good. But I'm not. I'm not on that bus. I'm just staying right here. Stay in my little hole. The Matt Cave. As the we Matt have cave. Established.
Oh, the Matt Cave.
The Matt Cave. I'm staying right here. I'm just watching.
That's well, you I'm can like do the watcher. That. You can do that. I'm going full theory. I'm saying Falcon and Winter Soldier's bringing back Super Soldier Serum. It's going to give us Black Widow stuff. It's going to explain U.S. Agent. But I'm also going to say I'm opening the door to my boy Luke Cage coming in back. Because that that AVX patch was developed from the Luke Cage process, which was a Super Soldier variant. All right.
Falcon what and Winter Soldier. What if we get Sentry?
Stop it. Stop it. You're just being silly and trying to just play with my emotions.
I mean, technically, if we want to get, you know, yes, whatever.
It's Marvel Sentry. I mean,
Sentry did. Reboot. Marvel there was needs some Superman. Of that. Just saying.
Yeah, there was. All right.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. I'm not touching
Janelle, are you hearing all this and is your head already hurting?
My head feels like it's going to explode, but I was tasked. I have a huge Winter Soldier lead-up comic that I'm currently starting. So I'm going to be ready, guys. I'm going to get over the WandaVision terrible predictions. I'm going to try again.
They weren't terrible. Bruce Wayne 25. You don't have to doubt. We're going to go all in on this. If it doesn't pan out, we're still going to have fun talking about it.
We got to.
Yeah. We got like what? 7 or 8 weeks before we have to face reality. That's enough time for me. All right. Yeah. So moving right along from that, we're going to be on Falcon and Winter Soldier. Hopping over to DC, we got new character trailers for Zack Snyder's Justice League this week. And I think more so than anything, these have gotten me the most excited to see this because I think these were the most effective at showing you, there's a much different movie inside of this. And taking it in, no matter what you feel about it, your favorite character got a trailer to shine in. And they were all really well produced and done. And super duper cool. Which one was your favorite? Let's see. I'm going to have to go out and say I kind of like the Flash one the best myself.
Me too.
I think it was because I mean, we didn't really Josh Whedon. It's just so obvious now that Josh Whedon's cut of Justice League really just screwed the Flash and Cyborg like the most in terms of their story, how deep it is and the setup for their individual films. And so I feel like this is the most interesting and Snyder's depiction of Barry Allen's powers is pretty interesting. And
it was less comical. Yeah. Like I felt like he was just a big joke in the original one. So it was nice to see him kind of like it felt more serious and more dire and the stakes, like him grabbing Spider-Man's spider thing. What is it called? Like that moment, he just it seemed more dramatic than like funny, and I liked that. And then also I felt like I'm not sure, I didn't check the actual timestamps on these, but I feel like some were longer than others, and so the ones obviously that were longer had more story to tell, and that helped me understand their character better. Like obviously we're very familiar with certain characters, but I'm so glad they went deep with him and Cyborg. Like I felt like Cyborg had a moment as
Cyborgs.
Well.
Yeah, Cyborgs. I mean, Cyborg's got me in the chest, but for real life reasons, right? Like that was a very meta trailer, and Zack Snyder really sent that one out as a love letter to Ray Fisher, and you know, just to say like, here you go, like this is what you've been talking about. Like, yeah, that was a much deeper Cyborg role, and I am psyched to see the Cyborg story in this the way like it was intended.
Well, that's my favorite trailer, is Cyborg.
Yeah.
Oh, now you speak up.
I was waiting. I was letting you guys talk. You guys were, you know, riffing. It's all good or whatever, right? So I was just saying, like, Cyborg was my favorite part of the original Justice League. Like his moments, a lot of his moments were so human, and I thought it was like Ray Fisher had a wonderful performance as him. And then honestly, there needed to be. I won't say more of it, but there just needed to be like a different focus in that movie because obviously it was going 900 directions. So like to have him be more of a through line and to have certain things focused on more would have been great. So that is like the one aspect. I'm glad that he is getting his spotlight because even in the small trailer, we get a lot of new footage or footage that wasn't in the original. And that voiceover stuff was great. So, that would be the one that sticks out. Also, as a runner-up, I will say, Steppenwolf does look better.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, the apocalypse. Better. Yeah, I was going to say the apocalypse side is I'm loving it. And the actor who's doing Darkseid is doing a great job. I love how Darkseid doesn't sound like every arch-villain. He actually sounds intelligent and like...
The Darkseid voice is cool. Yeah, I don't like the design, but the Darkseid voice is cool. But Steppenwolf
looks like Darkseid. I mean,
but looks like it was like, you know, well, I was going to say something. I don't need to say that. But I was going to say, I'm not going to go there. Steppenwolf looks like a legit powerful, like when he's facing in that Wonder, I think it's Wonder Woman's trailer where you see him.
Yes.
Like that full.
She goes on the attack.
Like, yeah. Like that part looks cool. Like that looks.
Dude,
that
no, the cool. scene with him and the Amazons, which was like one of my favorite standouts of the actual Whedon cut, looks 10 times better in this. Yeah. Like, and like Hippolyta. And yeah, they look like they go at it with him and like he's a legit threat that he kills like all the Amazons. So yeah. This is going to be wild, man. I won't want to flex or anything, but, you know, these are starting to come out. People are starting to see the Snyder Cut. Press is starting to do its thing. So I think we're going to be up on this pretty soon, and, you know, sooner than next Friday. So we can't tell you guys anything, but we'll know a few things more, and we'll have some interesting
stuff. Are you proud of me? I was positive. I was all
That's the most positive you've ever been about the Snyder Cut, and yeah, I'm really proud. It only took like half a dozen character trailers, but we got there. All right. Who wants the Snyder Cut? We're going to take a real quick venture into talking about Coming to America, the long-awaited sequel to Coming to America. That never works out right when you say them. It was released on Amazon Prime Video this past weekend, and Coming to America smashed it was the biggest debut for a new streaming movie in the past year. That means it beat Wonder Woman 1984. Wow. Like, yeah, Borat, subsequent movie film. Like, yeah, it beat a lot of things so far. Wow. I'm sure that won't last too long when like Godzilla versus Kong and stuff starts dropping and Snyder Cut starts dropping. But it's a pretty good achievement for Amazon, and it showed just how much I think of a fan base there really is still for this kind of movie and maybe this franchise. We'll see how everybody felt about the sequel. All I'm going to say, because we're not going to go too deep on this, is I like Coming to America for what it was. People have said it's safe, it's this, that. And you're like, yeah, it was safe. I don't think this is a time to try edgy comedy. People don't tend to take it very well. So just doing a safe ode to the original was great. It was just a lot of fun. It was silly. It was kind of stupid. I loved all the cameos. There are just so many fantastic cameos in this movie, from just like character actors of today to just big iconic people who show up in this for just like random things. It was just like a lot of fun. And it captured, and I think they did a good, like kind of funny, but wholesome story. Mm-hmm. And that was good for, you know, Eddie Murphy's Prince Akeem. But also the younger characters got to step forward and, you know, take center stage and were really good. And yeah, they did a really good job. So I just enjoyed it for what it was. It was just kind of silly, fun. And it's a sequel I will go back and watch again. And I will watch both films again as a set.
Yep. Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
I don't have to hide this one away. Like, you know, like,
like Anger Man 2.
Yeah. No, whoa.
That's not good.
Stop it. I will not let you badmouth Anchorman on this podcast.
I didn't say Anchorman. I said Anchorman 2. Anchorman Man is a classic.
Slap you in public.
Anchorman 2 is trash.
I will slap you in public.
I agree. Obviously, we went on that tangent, but nothing to do with Coming to America. It's actually, I feel like this is the perfect have a movie on while I'm doing other things, and you like laugh here and there, like moments. It's like it does enough to catch your attention in small moments, and like, oh, that's funny, and like it gets a reaction from you. But it's also, you know, kind of like it's great noise in the background. Like it doesn't require your full attention to get something out of it.
That's an important caveat to kind of add on there, because I definitely was doing other things while I was watching it. And like you said, popping in and being like, oh, that's funny. Oh, whoa, that's, you know, so-and-so. Yeah. Holy.
But I didn't feel like I missed anything. And like, it does a good job of like catching you up scene to scene, of like giving you what you need to know in that exact moment to understand what's happening, as opposed to like, well, I missed that 15 minutes in the beginning. I have no clue what's going on. Mm-hmm. I also just really like that typically in movies that you know, like bring someone else into the family, right? We've seen that time and time again of like, oh, hey, you didn't know these people were here. So here's the family kind of dynamic interrupted and like sides are taken and stuff like that. And you see like Jermaine Fowler Leslie Jones, who I adore in this movie. You find both of them like are brought into the family. You still get some of those riffs, but like they're not villainized. Like they're mm-hmm. not made to be like, oh, well, they're the enemy coming into our family.
And there was a moment I was worried about that, because there's a moment in the beginning where Akeem comes to see them and he's like, oh, he is your father. And I was like, are they going to pull like he's not really your father type deal? I was like, please don't right. do that.
Yeah. But I like that, like when they get there, yeah, there's some of that split, obviously. But they're just a great mom and son. They have a great mom and son relationship. They're just, it's very authentic and very genuine and like, you root for them from the very beginning, even though they're the disrupting force in this family, you still like them. And so I like that they kind of avoided that of like, no, they're bad. They're different. And then the other side of the family is good. So I dig that. Yeah, it was nice. Fun.
Yeah, it was wholesome. I watched it with my parents and my fiance. And I will say you're totally right. If you are just like trying to give it your full attention and sit down and like chew on it, it's kind of annoying. Like it's kind of boring. Like you're just, my mom got up and was like, I need to like meal prep for tomorrow or something. But, and then she came back in and finished it out and it was totally fine. But shout outs to the costume designer, because the costumes were beautiful and the use of music was really, really nice. There were elements that were just really, really cool. And of course, it would not top the first one, but it's a lovely companion.
Ruthie Carter is the costume designer, the Oscar-winning costume designer for Black Panther, who did this movie too. So, yeah. Gorgeous. I mean, she's really nailed the like make Africa look awesome on film. It's kind gorgeous. Of
neat. I think we can all agree, though, that it did not touch the...
No, I mean, it can't.
Soul, Glow, McDowell, all that stuff. You can't touch any of that. I mean, there were just nice head nods to that. That's as much as it could do. It didn't try to top it. And it was just like, bring back some of our favorite stuff and the jokes. And even down to the sexual chocolate cameo at the end. and just all that. I mean, I like that about the movie, that it references, like, it knows it can't top the original. So they're just like, let's have fun. You know, let's just do riff. There are a couple things I will say. First of all, I'm loving Kiki. Kiki Lane is doing just more and more awesome stuff. Like, she was the oldest daughter, Mika, in this. She was also the main character in The Old Guard, the Netflix movie. She was the one they recruited into The Old Guard. Yeah.
I was trying to remember what I recognize her from. That's awesome.
So, and she's also from If Beale Street Could Talk. So, like, yeah, she's killing it. And she's awesome. Leslie Jones, I mean, just keeps proving she can just kill it. I mean, she was fantastic in this movie, like hilarious. I was gonna say one more thing, but I feel like I'm now all blanking on it. Ah, man. Oh, and I was thinking about it last night. I don't think anybody else in comedy, number one, has the stones to try, but can actually pull it off of doing somebody of another race so well and like not at all offensively as Eddie Murphy plays that old Jewish man in Coming to America. Like, his character is amazing. And like, as somebody who has like a good deal of Jewish friends, they love that character and he just does it. And I don't know anybody who can dress up as a person of a different race and make people as happy as Eddie Murphy does as a Jewish man. So, you know, props to him. He still got it. So there you go. That's Coming to America. One thing we were also going to talk about real quick was The Walking Dead. It's back. All I'm going to say is Walking Dead's trash. Cancel this show.
Wow.
Like, wow. Walking Dead. I've been saying that for like two seasons, but this time I really mean it. Like,
yeah, I
really
got hate for Anchorman 2. Can I just... Okay. I got hate for Anchorman
2. Who's going to support? I mean,
you've written off an entire show.
Okay, our audience who's live with us right now, does anybody like really super feeling these Walking Dead episodes?
I don't think anyone could feel these episodes because they are shot during a pandemic. They were bonus episodes that were never really going to happen. You can tell that they rushed the script and the dialogue. You can tell that a lot of the lines are ad-libbed. To the point where even the actors don't know what they're about to say, or maybe they don't remember their lines. That happened several times, especially there was one moment with Carol. I watched both episodes right before the pod, and I will say that the reintroduction, episode 17, season 10, was cool. It was slow, but it didn't like frustrate me. Like, I was excited about it, and it still felt like my Walking Dead. I will say that the following episode, episode 18, if you just watch recaps of the episode, because that's what I started with, I was actually very excited about what that episode was going to do. We got introduced to Dog, which is Daryl's dog. Spoilers, by the way.
Nobody.
And we got like a, we got a love. Seriously, how many times have Walking Dead fans been like begging for Daryl to have a love interest? Like, we've tried to ship him with every single castmate. So to see him actually have that was great. But then when I watched the episode, it just wasn't done well. And I hate
What's
to
their
see
ship
that.
Name? What's their ship name?
Oh, nobody cares.
This was just a random woman. Oh. Like, this was somebody new, and it was a flashback. And I like flashback episodes, and I like character development episodes, but just the whole vibe just feels different. And
Flash Barrel.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because they're throwing these in, but I have hopes for season 11. And I'm hoping that this was the lull episode of these added episodes. I know, but I'm a diehard Walking Dead fan. So I have to give it an honest shot, you know?
All right. Well, I'm going to go with the audience who's just like, move on, like move on. And we're going to move on. Walking Dead. Right now it is definitely living up to its title. I mean, I can tell you that.
I knew that was coming.
it's still walking, and it's definitely dead. All right.
Yeah.
So moving right along, let's get to something we really want to spend time on, which is talking about this week's comics. So this week, Matt, what do we have? Take it away.
Yeah, so let's start with something I feel like we will all have something to say about. So Joker number one comes out now. This spins off. Picks up pretty much where the Joker War ended. So, of course, like we saw, you know, Joker kind of get away, which we all lamented at the time. Since then, in Infinite Frontier Zero, which we also all read, we saw like Arkham Asylum. There was this big explosion there and this big massacre, really, and a bunch of people got free. So that is also important to note. And this is a solo issue that has is split into three parts. It has a prologue, the main story, and then actually continues from when we all read that punchline one shot, has the continuation of that storyline here. So there's a lot that kind of goes into this one issue of like stuff to know. But, you know, just as a real quick thing, the thing I was actually most pleasantly surprised, I will say, about is that actually this is not a typical Joker story, in the fact that like it's really not about Joker. It's about Commissioner Gordon, who has the effects that the Joker and his past with him has had on him, and kind of jettisoning off from there, which I actually liked, because when this was first announced, I'm not gonna lie, I've been on, and Kofi, we talked about this, I was on a little bit of Joker burnout for a minute there, especially in the comics, because we'd had a couple different sort of mini events and series with him. And then of course, like all the movie stuff that had been, was it not included this or whatever. The Joker is always prevalent. And it was just like, it was a lot for me. I was kind of on burnout a little bit. And so, you know, it's like one of those things when they announced this, I was like, I'm not necessarily looking forward to just a solo series, but I actually really liked this issue in the fact that it approached it from this point of view. Now, next issue, who knows? We go back to the Joker being the solo star and that's it. Maybe I'll feel differently. But this I dug because it was more from Gordon. But Janelle, what do you think being the Joker fan?
I was also kind of, I have like a stack of Joker comics that I need to be reading and I have been reading. So I get it. Like, I was kind of like, oh, okay, all right, DC, we're going to do more Joker. I love my Joker, but I was a little nervous about it. I do like that it's not so heavily focused just on Joker. I am very excited about Punchline. I cannot wait to keep digging into that whole side of it. And truly, there was just one slide. Do we call them slides when it's just one of the images in the entire thing? One of those like made my stomach turn.
Oh, and I think I know what you're talking about.
I feel like that is so spoilers on these comics, but there is one shot or one piece of art of a 17-year-old girl's body laying on a table and a serial killer or some scary villain eating her face. And yeah,
they fridged you in this episode.
There is only one little piece of art that can have my body respond in that way, I am very impressed with that. So I can't wait to see where the story goes, and I can't wait to see more from this whole thing on so many different fronts, like whether it's our main character or narrator, whether it's a punchline story, and of course, Joker. I'm excited.
Kofi?
I'm with you. I wasn't interested in a new Joker series like at all. I was on Joker Burnout too, because I feel like people haven't done as great with the Joker stories we've been getting. Mm-hmm. And it's been more interesting to see like the magistrate and all that stuff that Joker kind of opened the door for. But I'm with you in the sense, Matt, that I like this issue because of how they approached it. This has been my favorite Jim Gordon has been since probably Batman Year One, and it had a lot of Year One vibes to it. And if you've never read like Frank Miller's Batman Year One, a lot of it is told from Jim Gordon's perspective as he's just a detective trying to get into the Gotham PD and dealing with all the corruption and his partner Flass. And it's a lot of it's kind of narrated through his internal dialogue and through this kind of hard boiled noir cop thing. And this is what this was for most of it. And it was just so great because his voice just comes through so well in this, from the story that the old cop told him in the bar about, you know, the whole evil really exists. And that was the thing Janelle was talking about him. And the old cop is the guy who found the cannibal eating a 17-year-old girl's face. Oof. And that scarred him forever. And like, you know,
scarred me too.
Scarred him to the point of eventually taking his own life because he could never find that guy. It was the one who got away. And setting that up as a metaphor for Jim Gordon and Joker. And it's scary in the sense that you're worried about Jim Gordon's mental health in this, like more so than anything. Mm-hmm. It's just, how is this dude doing? Because as he just himself kind of breaks down, Joker's messed him up really bad. Not just as a man with all the things he's done to his family, but just as a cop and the concept of fighting evil and knowing this guy is still out there constantly. And so I'm more intrigued in what happens to Jim Gordon on this journey of being hired. And spoilers, he gets hired through people that I think are the Court of Owls personally, or somebody related to that. But to kill Joker, he's become a Joker hitman. And so I'm kind of interested to see his internal journey of having to go down and face Joker. And ultimately, if he chooses to not kill him for some reason and why, will be kind of more important than any story about Batman doing that to me. Mm-hmm. So I hope they stick with this angle because I did it. And Jim Gordon's just great. Like, his voice is so good. Like when he's walking down the street, he's just talking about how crazy things are and how nuts it is right now. And then this limo pulls up and a lady's just like, get in the car. And they like kind of threaten him to get in the car. And he's like, it's about Joker. And he's like, yeah, sounds about right. And he just gets in the car. Yeah, because he's just like, you know, because he's just like, he's on like total FML mode. And he's just like, oh, another thing. Okay, whatever. Like, and then we get to the thing. And then when they take him to the mansion, like, this lady's like monologuing to him. And he's just like, look, miss, like, I don't know what to tell you. It's weird me getting into cars with strange young women old enough to be my daughter and showing up at mansions for I don't know what. So just please tell me what's going on. So I can start to deal with like what's happening here. And it was great. And I was just happy we didn't really get any kind of like Batman influence in this. And it was just about the other characters, you know, surrounding this and coming out of Joker War. So again, everything around Joker War is the best stuff about Joker War, you know.
It's one of those things where it did open up a lot of, it did deliver on, you know, opening up that side of the DC universe in an interesting way and setting the threads for a lot of things. But like as an event itself, as a story in itself, I didn't love it, but I do like, it's like one of those things, right? When we talk about Secret Invasion, and like Secret Invasion is really well liked. I really enjoyed Secret Invasion, but if you take, to me, the event itself is actually less interesting than what came after, which was Dark Reign. And Dark Reign, you needed one to set up the other, but like Dark Reign is so interesting just from a world building standpoint of like how all the characters get to kind of bounce off of that and move different places. And then we also got Siege, which I adore. So, like, it's one of those things. Right now, I will say Secret Invasion was better than Joker War. I'm not comparing the two. But I think it's interesting going forward. I do like where we are. So moving over to the Marvel side, then we, of course, have Children of the Atom, number one, which I am not going to lie. I'm actually very excited to hear what Kofi has to think about this. So what I will say is just the general premise is, like, you know, it's this very young team. They're looked at as these kind of X-Men sidekicks because they all have either costumes or powers or whatever that kind of mimic those. And one's even called Mimic. And, you know, we've seen this before in the form of like ex-babies, which, you know, I think Jamie Lovett has a special place for ex-babies. But we've seen this kind of concept before. But here we actually get like to find out about these characters from just their individual struggles and things like that, with one very interesting thing towards the end. So I will say spoilers here in case we get to that. And then, of course, how Krakoa and the X-Men react to them, because they're one of the few groups of mutants that are actually outside of Krakoa. They are not, they did not move home with everybody else. They are actually just chilling out. So, Kofi, what did you think?
Okay. This is an interesting thing to come, because first of all, I'm going to say about the ending is Marvel is just dropping these cliffhangers that I think they think are so deep that are just confusing to people. Because I had to go back and read this like three times and be like, wait, what? Like, what's actually happening in the end of this comic? And I can see Janelle's face is just like, what?
I'm so frustrated with that. I have no idea what happened. Yeah, and I didn't care. I was like, you know what? Moving on, Joker. Give me Joker. I don't care. Like, I don't know what happened. And I don't care because this is a coming of age tale of teenagers. And I just do not care about them.
Okay, there you go. I was the opposite. I think the thing that stuck me in was the intrigue of who these kids are. And their setup in their kind of civilian life in high school together, and even just what's going on in their clique of them was the most interesting thing to me. Like, I would begin to follow these characters for many years if they become like a Teen Titans to the mm-hmm. X-Men, like, because they are immediately interesting to me, even though they are all kind of ripoffs. And the fact that they're ripoffs of X-Men that they kind of idolize or whatever is interesting.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah. And the Cyclops character, she's very interesting as a central character in like what's going on with her and the
Cyclops
love triangle.
Last. You yeah, gotta love that name.
And just Cyclops Last. Yeah. So just her kind of romantic triangle with her best friend and this other dude and like all of that. I actually like that stuff. And I don't like coming of age tales in comic books a lot. So yeah. This was kind of good. And I also like the X-Men's discussion about, like, what do we do about them kids?
Yeah.
But I'm a little worried about the kind of mystery of this series and what they're kind of setting up, because I feel like it's already been implied that I get, like, the kind of underlying secret, quote-unquote, to this is going to be that they're not really mutants. Mm-hmm. And mutants is some kind of, you know, social identity metaphor that they're putting on because they just feel like outsiders or whatever. I think that's the ending of the comic, is they can't go through the gate is because they're not mutants. And and that's going to be kind of what this is all about.
Or like, and one of them isn't, so it holds them all back. That's what I thought was happening.
Yeah. I mean, that's also a good strong possibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
After that scene in the basketball court, I agree with you. I feel like that's where they're leaning. Is that whole back and forth of like mutants, you know, when they have that whole discussion in there and like to tell the other dude to walk. And it's like, you know, mutants are like, do you identify with them? They're moving, they're giving all these men, like they have that whole back and forth dialogue. I think you're right. I think that's kind of leaning towards that way.
And that kind of makes me a little nervous, because that makes me feel like in some ways this could be like a weird reaction to kind of the social movements of last year and kids and like, where do you fit into that? Are you an ally? Are you really part of this struggle? Like those kinds of things. And I don't want to see Marvel get preachy about that personally. But I feel like this is where this could head. But I hope it doesn't. I hope it does do some deeper things about these kids, their identities as mutants. Where do they want to be part of this group at Krakoa, and why not? And like, what's going on there? I hope it gets to something deeper than that. But I enjoyed this issue, and it brought some intrigue to me.
It's weird because I'm actually right in between you guys, because starting out, I was not into this. Like, the designs are cool. I like the designs, mm-hmm. you know, and like they're back and forth and stuff. But like, they just weren't clicking with me as characters early on. And then it was actually the one at the basketball court, which kind of that one is about midway through. And that's kind of when it started winning me over. Ugh. Mostly, but for the stuff, not for the societal stuff, for the, like, you know, oh, well, I'm like that triangle part that comes in, and then you find out some other things. And then you see like her, when they go to leave is when it really hit me, because like, you know, she's talking about how difficult this is, because like, I'm really the only one my father has, and like all that stuff. When we start getting to the people that are underneath and the real core of these people, that's what's interesting to me. And then also the conversation between the X-Men, as far as like, we can't kidnap people, we can't make people come here. And they're weighing the things of, you know, what is going too far and what is just reminding them that, hey, they could come here. That stuff's interesting. I have to say, we have to set the table, because a very important thing happened in this issue, and that was Maggot's back. Can we address?
I knew you were going to be on that as soon as I saw that page. And I was like, Matt's going to be on one today.
I flipped my mind. I lost my mind. I was like, it's Maggot. It's Maggot. Oh, and Eenie and Meenie too. They're in there and they have the whole conversation. That's really the most important takeaway.
They
played
them. They literally play them. It's Maggot, Magma, and Fairy. And they come to try to recruit these kids. And the kids are like, whatever, and kind of blow them off, and they go to Krakoa, and Wolverine and them are straight up like, yeah, but we sent like the B team. Like, what if we actually sent the A team to recruit these people? Like, they may come, and it's just
they're not wrong. They're not wrong.
But didn't you feel like that was such a waste of space? And like, then if you just, why didn't you guys just go to begin with? Like, why do they even write that part? That's where I was just like, why am I reading so much?
For people like me, they wrote it because. Someone, whether it's Vita or like someone on the writing team or the art team, is a fan of Maggot, like I am. And they went, no, we're getting Maggot in this book.
Oh,
and they did.
Gosh.
And they did. Because if I was writing a Marvel book, you're damn straight that Maggot would be in almost every team. And like, I would have certain people, right? We all have. But yes, I just like that he's there. So now in one of the 9 X books that are coming later in the year, someone can use him now because he's been introduced.
Aww.
He is around. There you go. So that is our main comics things. I will say there were actually a lot of great books this week. So I will give a quick shout out to some of those if you are looking for other picks. Spectre and Spectres #2 is out this week, which is kind of like if Scooby-Doo Adventures had like more horror teeth and like some interesting interpersonal relationships and things like that. It's got a very cartoony art style, but it's actually has some really interesting characters. It's really funny. So it's kind of like Scooby-Doo Adventures on like that next tier. So if you want to check that out, we also have Daredevil #28, which that whole run has been excellent. And this is not, doesn't change that in any way. Elektra as Daredevil has been really good. And Matt Murdock's whole thing with him being voluntarily in prison keeps going to some interesting places. I also will say Batman Urban Legends #1 is out this week, which has the Outsiders story that picks up from Future State. So that picks up here. Same way with Grifter, that also picks up here. This is a collection of those stories. So if you are interested in that, you can check that out. And then I have to give a real quick shout out on Comixology. They did a collection of The Final Night, which if you've not read The Final Night, it's actually just a really, I think, great classic DC story. It's one of those just like, it's like three or four issues and they collect them all into one. And it also has a lot to do with Hal Jordan and Parallax and a lot of Green Lantern stuff at the end, but I won't get into that. But I will say like, it's just a really good DC story. So if you are looking for something to read, you should check that out. So that's comics.
All right, Matt. Thanks, buddy. I don't usually get to mix my love of hip hop and hip hop culture with this show at all. But today is a rare opportunity. This was the week was March 9th, the anniversary of the death of the Notorious B.I.G. And so Netflix put out that Notorious B.I.G. documentary. And I started watching that and I started sharing it with friends. And it turned into a whole forum of great hip hop TV kind of streaming content out there right now. So I just thought I'd share it with anybody on here who might love that stuff. Yeah. So the Notorious B.I.G. documentary is on Netflix. That's great. I'm not saying I cried. I'm saying other people cried. Hip Hop Undercover, the FX series, which is now on FX Hulu, and which is really interesting, is about the real kind of people who were in the kind of crime syndicates and gangs that like a lot of early hip hop was based off of. So the real people behind kind of the stories people told on the mic in that, and like how they helped, you know, these criminals helped build this genre and this industry, but then how it got messy because, you know, what happens when entertainers and real criminals are in the same circle, like something's got to give on either side. Yeah. Right? And so that's what that series is about. And it's fantastic. Check that out. It'll take up some good time. And Supervillain, The Making of Tekashi 6ix9ine, on Showtime was another docuseries that is super good. It's great because this one doesn't hype or just promote or glorify this character in any kind of way. It's very interesting and is about the culture around him that made this possible, this weird blip in our kind of, you know, musical culture. And it's narrated by Giancarlo Esposito and framed like a superhero story of how a supervillain gets made. And showing you the calculated movements that this person made to make himself a real life supervillain, from the colors to the, you know, the gang to the
world,
and what happens when that got real. And like Giancarlo Esposito is a great narrator for that.
I will definitely check that out.
Yeah. So it is, and it's a pretty intense thing. And it's a great look at just like what the culture of social media, clout, fame, all that stuff is all about, and how just gross it can really get. So
interesting.
Those are three things. Notorious B.I.G. doc, Netflix, Hip Hop Uncovered, FX, Hulu, and making of a supervillain, making of Tekashi 6ix9ine's on Showtime. It's docuseries. You can check any of those out. That is hip hop I don't ever get to talk about on the show.
All right. That's awesome. Oh, quick thing, by the way, there was the Steppenwolf teaser did just release.
If you go
right to the end, you're gonna see a little flash of green, which is dope.
What?
Oh my god, it's happening. Everybody shut up. It's happening.
So anyway, thank you for the tip, Dustu. Thank you for the tip.
Green Lantern at the end there. And all I gotta say about my live reaction to the Steppenwolf trailer is that we were right. Steppenwolf slaps in this version.
He does. He looks way better.
There you go.
More content.
Yeah, Steppenwolf slaps in Zack Snyder's Justice League, and this is going to be a good ride. All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you, everyone, for riding with us, as always. Thank you for all our audiences on Twitch, on Facebook, on YouTube. We love you guys for tuning in live for the show. If you came in late or just missed it, rewind any of this. We talked about WandaVision, the upcoming MCU projects. Now that we've seen WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Zack Snyder's Justice League, it all went down in this show. It's great. If you want to talk about more content, we have Phase Zero, which will premiere on Friday with Brandon Davis. We'll be talking about Falcon, Winter Soldier, more WandaVision, more Justice League. We'll go even deeper into all that stuff. So Comic Book Podcast Universe is up and running. Be sure to check it out. It's on all your favorite platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio. Tell your smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast. It'll get it going for you. Leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We're going to send out t-shirts. We're going to get vaccinated soon, baby. We're on our way. So we're going to get back to that storeroom, which is like a treasure trove of t-shirts. All our 5-star reviewers are getting t-shirts. All right. That'll do it for the show. Thank you guys again for tuning in. I'm Kofi Outlaw. We are out. Comic Book Nation. Peace.
Deuce.
Bye, guys.